Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Good afternoon, everybody. I am John Schmelk. Today we're joined by the great Paul Dottino, talking Giants football with you for the next hour, taking your calls at 201-939-4513 or on Twitter. If you want to participate on social media, it's hashtag Giants Chat. Paul, good afternoon. How are you?
Good to see you, John. A beautiful day outside. Thank goodness for that. Although rain's coming later on, it's not going to ruin my day.
Excellent. And we're getting into heavy draft stuff now. April's only a day away. And I figure a great way to kick it off is being joined by one of our friends of the program from NFL Draft Bible. Founder, the man with the plan, that's Rick Saratella. Rick, what's going on, pal? We talked to you at the Combine. Good to hear from you again. How's it going with you?
Hey, always a pleasure. Glad to be here, guys.
All right, Rick, let's get right to it. Pro days are going on as we speak. Florida State's going on today. A lot of people excited to see Jameis Winston. Anybody from any program you've seen in the last few weeks since we last spoke at the Combine with all these pro days and everything, seriously either rising or falling up and down these draft boards?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely, I think where you see the risers and the fallers are really, I think you see more risers among some of the smaller prospects that weren't invited to the Combine. I think for the most part, the high-profile guys, we have a pretty good feel for what they look like. We got a good look at them at the Combine, so I don't think anyone's going to blow the gates off the door, so to speak, to try to really rapidly improve their draft stock. I know, you know, Shane Ray didn't run a fast 40 times. Scouts were a little bit disappointed. Randy Gregory, you know, admitted to failing the drug test. Maybe that hurts his draft stock a little bit, but we've been dealing with that since the Warren Sapps and the Randy Mosses. So I don't think any main high-profile guys really drastically improved their stock, but, you know, the pro day circuit is interesting. Some of the guys that didn't get the shine up in Indianapolis get a chance to prove themselves. A guy like Tyrell Williams from Western Oregon putting out a big pro day, and then the Patriots flying them out across the country for a private workout the next day. So you hear a lot of stories like that.
You know, I want to ask you, because one of the things that John and I have been talking about over the last few weeks, and it's a pet peeve of mine, I'm not a big fan of these tweener pass rushers. And right now there seems to be a very, very high priority on those guys, especially because you have three, four teams, you know, who like that hybrid kind of guy. I'm a traditional right now 4-3 guy who doesn't like those tweeners. Why do you suppose that there is such a high priority being placed on those guys? And do you really think that some of these teams are making a mistake in drafting guys so high and they really don't have a position for them?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the big problem with the NFL is everybody needs a pass rusher. You can never have enough pass rushers, and there's just not enough of them. So what we do is we try to, you know, fall in love with guys that sometimes maybe aren't really fit for our scheme. But the big problem here is the college football game is really moving to a more spread out type of game. The college game is predicated more around speed. So what happens is a lot of times you have the undersized defensive ends playing in a faster, smaller college game, and then when they get to the next level at the NFL, they're not really big enough to play defensive end, so we have to transition them over to outside linebacker. And I think that's why you find a lot of these tweener guys, and there's only really a handful of guys that, you know, play defensive end in college that are really going to be a defensive end pass rusher at the next level. You talk about a guy like Dante Fowler, another one, Preston Smith from Mississippi State. You got the kid from UCLA, and then most of these other guys are going to be converted to outside linebackers, and we all know what happens, you know, when you ask a defensive end with the hand in the dirt, you stand him up as an outside pass rushing linebacker. Now he has to cover running backs, tight ends, and that's a whole other process and development that NFL coaches have to get with that player and help that transition to the next level.
To follow up on that, that to me is one of the big mysteries of this thing, because when you're talking about potentially, John, a top 10, top 12, top 15 pick, okay, you've got enough of trouble trying to deal with the character issues, trying to deal with the health issues, making sure he's medically clean. Then you got to figure out, okay, where is his talent level? How does he project to the next level? And then on top of that, when you look at one of these tweener guys who now you want to project as an outside linebacker, and now he's got to drop into coverage, which maybe he's never done in his entire four-year college career, which is the case with some of these guys. Boy, you talk about a reach, and if he's going to be a top 10 pick, boy, that's a hell of a gamble to make in some of these cases.
Yeah, and, you know, I think going back just on the Shea Ray example, you know, at the pro day, people, scouts were disappointed in run so fast. And then also in the linebacker drills, when he was asked to do some pass coverage, he looked real stiff in the hips. And we all know what his bread and butter is, being able to get to the quarterback. And here's a guy, he's legit SEC Defensive Player of the Year,
exactly.
And he brings it. And he can get to the quarterback. Now, when you ask him to cover somebody, that's a whole other question.
How do you see him? One of those guys that I think is in that category that, you know, right now is being projected. We're joined by Rick Saratella, by the way, from NFL Draft Bible. In the mid to late first round is Bud Dupree. Do you think a guy like Dupree, Rick, can convert to a 4-3 DN? Does he have the size and frame to do that? Or do you see him as more of either the 3-4 outside linebacker and pass rusher or a 4-3 strong side linebacker in the pros?
No, I very much believe so, and you never know what teams are going to do. I mean, you talk about Von Miller with the Denver Broncos. People, you know, they kind of flipped the script on us. He fitted real well there. And just touch on some tweeners, you know, you got guys like Deion Jordan you never even hear from. But, you know, as far as Bud Dupree goes, I love what this kid brings to the table. He's fast enough to play outside linebacker, but he does have the frame to play 4-3 defensive end because he's 6'4".
That's where I want him, Rick.
He has the room to grow into that frame. And, you know, with the NFL weight training program, coaching, you know, he gets with the right guys at the NFL level. He's going to pack on another 15, 20 pounds of bulk and can definitely play defensive end if he's drafted by a 4-3, you know, scheme, and that's what they want to do with him.
A second guy I want to address specifically in the same category is Vic Beasley. He blew people away at the combine, Rick. We were there. We saw it. How do you view him in his transition to the next level? Where do you think he fits the best in the pros?
You know, I really like him. I'm having a feeling that the Washington Redskins might pluck this guy. I think he kind of fits almost that Brian Arakpo mold, which, you know, they lost him during free agency. So I believe he's definitely a 3-4 outside linebacker. He's at 246 pounds right now, and he's already packed on about 10, 15 pounds since the end of the season. So I don't really see him. I would imagine that his playing weight is right around 245, 250 pounds. That's where he maxes out. And I think that puts him more in the prototypical 3-4 outside linebacker type of thing. And you mentioned he blew up the combine. The speed is obviously there with a 4.53 40, pretty much the fastest 40-yard dash we saw amongst all of the pass rush athletes. And then he also had the fastest 3-cone drill and the fastest 60-yard shuttle. So, I mean, this guy definitely has the athleticism and it could be a premier pass rusher, I believe.
I remember you asked me about him 2 weeks ago, and I said, well, if I can be convinced that he can be an outside backer, that's where he is for me. He's an outside backer. So I'm with you on that one, Rick. I want to ask you about Shaq Thompson because we get a lot of calls about him, John. We really do. I see him as a strong safety, an in-the-box guy, and a dime linebacker. From what you've been able to glean from talking to people around the league, where do most of the people see him fitting?
You know, I know a few teams like him at running back. I really don't think that's going to happen. From most of the people that I've spoken to, they like him at linebacker, but I'm actually going to agree with you, and I think that his best position or the position he can make the most impact at the next level would be at that strong safety position just because, you know, he can be – similar to a Dione Buchanan who came out last year with the Arizona Cardinals, where you talk about they took Buchanan at that strong safety position and almost created a new hybrid position with Buchanan there and kind of played him at a strong safety slash linebacker type of role depending on the situation. And I think that's a perfect type of hybrid role for Shaq Thompson at the next level. I think he's a little bit undersized to play linebacker. Just me personally at 225 pounds, I'd like to see my linebackers with a little more bulk. And I think, you know, he has the speed at strong safety, not the fastest guy compared to the other safeties, but fast enough. He played running back. I think his game speed is definitely faster than his hand speed or his 40-yard dash time.
Joined by Rick Saratella from NFLDraftBible.com. Rick, I want to touch on a couple of the defensive tackles that are expected to go in the first round of the draft. And I just want to give me little thumbnails on each one of these three guys, what they do well, how do you think they fit in the pros. Let's go Arik Armstead, Danny Shelton, and Malcolm Brown.
Okay, Eric Armstead from Oregon. I mean, this guy's been on our radar for quite a while. I think he's a versatile guy. He's played a lot of different positions there at Oregon. But I think ideally, I like him as a 3-4 defensive end. I know a lot of people like him as defensive tackle. But for me, I think he's a guy that could kind of hold containment there in a 3-4 scheme as a defensive end. I really like him there. Danny Shelton of Washington, I think he's more of your prototypical nose tackle type of guy. Obviously 340 pounds, but you know, really you could plug and play him in any type of scheme. He's gonna make it work. And the third guy you said?
Malcolm Brown.
This guy, you know, the more and more I see of him, I think that, you know, he's going to probably be a top 20 selection. He can play the 5 technique, 4-3 defensive tackle. He's going to bring a lot of explosion off the step, you know, one of these guys that could get to the quarterback, so to speak, which some of these, you know, Armstead, Shelton really aren't going to give you much of a pass rush, where Malcolm Brown has that explosion, that quickness to get to the quarterback, could be more of a guy that, you know, gets some sacks where, you know, Armstead and Shelton do not.
All right, I got one for you. We're a month out, but I'm going to ask you if there is one guy who a lot of people think is going to go in the first round, but he's going to be that sympathy guy. You know, that guy that ESPN focuses on with the camera, and he starts dropping and dropping and dropping, and before you know it, he's a third or he's a fourth round pick. Who would you take a shot at right now is that poor guy who's going to drop like an anchor?
You know, that's an interesting question. And, you know, I don't know if he drops out of the first round, but I think he is going to drop. That's Randy Gregory from Nebraska on the defensive side of the ball. On the offensive side of the ball, I'll give you one that, you know, everybody seems to think that Dorial Green-Beckham is an automatic lock for the first round. But I'll tell you, you know, with such a strong wide receiver crop this year, I think he has a chance to maybe slide out of that first round and some of these other guys slide ahead of him.
Right now, Rick, how are these NFL teams viewing Amari Cooper and Kevin White? Do they have them almost on the same level, 1 and 1A? Do you see both guys going off the board before the Giants go at 9? How do you see Cooper and White falling here with draft day just a month away?
To me, these are the top two players in the draft after Leonard Williams. So I think there's no doubt about it. Amari Cooper's the most polished wide receiver in this draft class, ready to make an immediate impact right now. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
The debate is the ceiling or the upside of Kevin White is much higher than Amari Cooper. So for me, you know, if I'm a team that's looking to win now, you know, you talk about a team like the Giants where, you know, they're a team that can turn it around relatively quick. I would go with the more polished guy like Amari Cooper. If I'm a team like the Oakland Raiders, they are picking at number 4, or even the New York Jets, who really, without a quarterback, aren't built to win right now. I like the upside of Kevin White more. I think he has greater potential to be more of like Larry Fitzgerald. But, you know, you really can't go wrong either way. This is similar to like Julio Jones, A.J. Green. What's your flavor of the week? But you just really can't go wrong.
What's your gut feeling right now? Do you think either, both, or neither will be on the board with the Giants go at 9?
You know, like I said, I think these are 2 and 3 overall players in the draft, so I find it hard to believe they'll be there at number 9.
I happen to agree with you.
Yeah, very difficult for me to believe that maybe even only one of them will be there, quite frankly.
All right,
so
Paul,
I'm with you.
We've held off asking about your guy. Go ahead.
Yeah, everybody around here knows that I'm a Brandon Scherff guy, and I guess my question for you, because I certainly have done enough study on him, and I've told people about this now for several weeks, there are some teams that believe he can start at right tackle in the NFL. There are other teams who believe he's just going to be a guard. I think he can actually wind up playing both in this league, wherever you need him. I'm curious as to your surveys around the NFL. Are you getting the feeling that there are more teams that think he's a guard or a tackle, or one way or the other?
The feeling that I'm getting is that most people believe he's a guard at the next level, and I think a lot of teams look at the arms. Took about 33-inch arms, just under 34-inch arms. When you look at, you know, the top five or six offensive tackles, it's one of the shortest measurements that come in. So people automatically assume, hey, he's Brian Bulaga. He needs to kick inside. But for me, he's a technician. He's fundamentally sound. He has the strength and experience to play left tackle or right tackle. To me, I think he's the best offensive lineman in this draft. I would have no problem with him playing left tackle, right tackle, guard. But I like him at tackle. And I think a team like the Giants where – you know, they kind of have a past history of moving guys around the line, whether it be David Deal, some of these other guys that, you know, they kind of mix and match or wait for a guy like William Beatty to develop. I think the beautiful thing about a guy like Brandon Scherff is that he has the ability to play multiple positions. So maybe you have a guy at tackle that's on the last legs. He's still a capable starter, but he only has 1 or 2 years left in the NFL. So you could have Scherff actually play guard until, you know, and make that transition. So, I mean, the versatility is really his greatest asset. And it's just really a matter of where he lands. And if it's with the Giants, I think he could play that tackle position. There's no doubt about it.
I'd like you to address one more thing for me about him, Rick, because the people who are on my case about grading Scherff so highly, and I'm glad to hear that you agree with me, by the way, because that means you're a good guy and you know what you're talking about. But the people who want to criticize him and who go against me on that pick say, well, look, he had some poor games at tackle against some speed edge pass rushers in his senior season. And I counter to them, the guy had meniscoscope in September. And you have to consider the fact all he did was miss one practice. And God only knows how much he was affected by that. Sure. And yet still gutted it out and played a full season. I'm curious as to how much that's come up in conversation when you've talked to people around the league.
Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be those situations where, you know, hey, look at the Senior Bowl week of practice where, you know, Danny Shelton came in, blew everybody up. And the only guy that was able to stop him really was a guard by the name of Laken Tomlinson from Duke. So Danny Shelton had his way with all these guys. And so I don't really hear anybody talking about that. So to me, you know, when you talk about Scherff, you know, maybe this year he had a couple games where, all right, some speedy guys got around him. But I think when you look at the whole body of work, and you talk about a guy who started for 4 years, yeah, you're going to have bad games. Just like Shane Ray, again, pops up, but here, talk about a positive. I mean, DJ Humphries from Florida could not stop him when they played Missouri. Now, that's another guy being linked to the Giants at number 9. But you can't just take one game and erase the whole body of work. I mean, when you talk about the long haul, this guy has a resume you just can't deny. And, yep. I think he's the safest pick in the draft, honestly.
Thank you, Rick. We're joined by Rick Saratella, NFLDraftBible.com. Last one from me, Rick. I want to touch on a couple of other offensive linemen that you've said have been linked to the Giants. You already mentioned DJ Humphries. The other guy I've seen linked to them a lot is Andrus Pete out of Stanford. And I've seen a lot of people have different opinions on where he eventually winds up. Is he a good enough athlete to wind up on the left side, or do you see him more as a guy that's going to put on some more weight and be that power right tackle? How do you see Andrus Pete, and do you think besides DJ Humphries, anybody else could go to the Giants at 9 on the offensive line?
Yeah, so Andrus Pete, I mean, the situation here is because he's nearly 6'7" tall.
Right.
I think he's still growing into his frame, and he's another guy where it's, you know, that dangerous P word potential. I think he's being linked to the Giants that high just because he has the potential to be a franchise left tackle. But I think when he initially comes into the league, he's going to need a little bit of work, a little bit of time, and teams are going to have to show patience with him. So I believe he actually begins. He's one of these guys who's going to begin as a right tackle and eventually shift to left tackle. That's what I believe. A guy that's rising up really fast, really rapidly, is the kid from Florida, Eric Flowers. This is another guy that could be taken in the top half of the first round, another guy that's just really rising up boards as we get closer to the draft. And I'll give you one sleeper. You know, the Bears surprised us a couple years ago with the kid from Oregon at offensive line. There's another one in this year's draft, Jake Fisher. I think this guy's a lock-in for the first round. Where he goes, I don't know. But I think when you talk about the whole NFL draft process and his work at the combine and his pro day workout, I think Jake Fisher has a legitimate shot to be in consideration there for the top 10, as shocking as that might be to some people.
Rick, great information as always. We'll get you on again before the draft. We'll dig a little bit deeper in the second and third round, guys. Fantastic information. We appreciate the time. Let's stay in touch, and we appreciate you coming on.
Always appreciate it, fellas.
Thanks, Rick. That's Rick Serratello. Does a great job, NFLDraftBible.com. You can check him out on Twitter, at NFLDraftBible. So does an excellent job. And Paul, he echoed a lot of the same stuff we've been hearing, talking to people around the league in terms of where a lot of these draft prospects are going to end up.
You know, John, there's still a month to go, and obviously, like the Gregory thing all of a sudden came up out of nowhere the other day. There are still possibilities that some of these guys that we're talking about may wind up having a red flag that we don't know about yet, whether it's a character issue or a medical issue. You never can tell. And the way things are shaping up, you know, and it always happens in the draft, when one guy falls, all of a sudden there's a domino effect and everything else kind of gets screwed up like a kaleidoscope. So you never know if something's going to cause havoc with your projections once you finally get there.
And I thought his two picks for guys that could drop were interesting because they're both guys now that have red flags on the character level. Gregory with the drugs, Dorial Green-Beckham getting thrown off his team pretty much over the course of the year. He had all sorts of problems with the coaching staff.
Not good.
And then throwing Gregory, he came to the combine weighing only 230-something pounds because he had been sick. So that's another red flag for him. So I happen to agree with him on both those names. I agree more on the Gregory side than the Dorial Green-Beckham side, but I could see both those guys dropping.
The one guy we did not ask him about, but he will be on again, I'm sure, as you said, before the draft, was Winston. You know, I'm not a fan of taking him with the first pick. Anita and I talked about it yesterday. I don't think he is a franchise quarterback. I don't like his skill set to be the number one overall pick. I also don't like the character issues that make him a risk as the number one overall pick. That's something as we get closer to the draft and there's more examination done on him, we certainly want to ask what he could tell us about the NFL rep on what Winston is going to wind up going.
There are things, and we'll get to your calls literally. This is my last comment. I'll get to your calls at 201-939-4513. You guys have been waiting patiently. I'll get to you in just a second. The thing about Winston, which I find interesting, you know, not a great athlete. You know, his 40 time doesn't blow you away. He's not one of these guys that's going to run around. So you're looking at him as purely a pocket quarterback. That's how you're viewing Jameis Winston. I think that's how you have to view him. So he has the size and the strength and the arm strength to do it.
He could throw it.
That's absolutely no question about it. Now, what worries about my worry with Winston is not his ability to read defense. I think he does that just fine.
He does.
He can, you know, anticipate, get balls in the small areas. That's fine. But I think you have to worry about his decision-making sometimes. He throws a lot of balls that he probably should hold. He's inconsistent even within games over the course of his college career. And there are things like that where you say, you know what, if he puts it all together, yeah, he has all the tools to be a great NFL quarterback. But he is nowhere near where, say, Andrew Luck was when he came out of school. He's
and to be
not
number
on
one,
level.
Don't you have to be?
Well, you don't have to be. You would like him to be.
Well,
Andrew Luck was as much of a sure thing that I've seen since I've been an adult watching the NFL draft. I haven't seen that many guys approach him.
And Winston is very streaky.
Well, and
his accuracy, very, very streaky.
And I didn't even mention the off-the-field stuff.
Right. So he can't be the number one overall pick if you have any common sense about you. But I know the Buccaneers are desperate for one, and they want to sell tickets, and I understand that they may wind up doing it.
But I could argue that there are, if not as many, maybe more red flags with Mariota, based on the fact he's never played in a pro system.
I wouldn't take Mariota number one overall either.
Desperate for a quarterback makes people do some funny things sometimes.
It does, and that's why, you know, that's why, to be honest with you, if I were the Buccaneers, I'd trade out of that first pick and see what I could get from some poor sucker that's going to want to go up to number one and get that quarterback.
And the theme, isn't it nice to have Eli Manning? 201-939-4513. Let's get to the calls. We'll take them the rest of the way to 1 o'clock. John Schmunk, Paul Dottino, Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Let's go to Rocky down in Florida. He can lead us off. Rock, what's going on?
How you fellas doing? It's been a while since I called.
Yeah, Rock, what's up, pal?
Yeah, actually, y'all about covered a lot of everything you could think of with Rick just then, even though I don't agree with some of those points. But I agree with Paul. I don't see Winston as a number one pick in my book, but luckily we're not picking number one, so I guess that matters.
Yeah, you don't want to be picking number one. That's a bad, bad thing.
But as far as the tweeners go, Paul, I don't have a problem with tweeners. I have a problem with these people that draft them and ask them to do what you didn't draft them for. If you draft a guy because he can get to the quarterback, like you said about Carl Banks, send him after the quarterback. Don't ask him to drop back in coverage if his strength is rushing the quarterback. I don't get that.
Well, Rocky, here, let me explain to you exactly what happens with some of these guys. You get these tweeners, and as Rick, our guest, was talking about, they're pass rushers in college, and they're getting after the QB, and there's such a premium on getting to the quarterback in the NFL that personnel departments and defensive coordinators will reach and say, well, look, he dominated as a pass rusher in college. We'll find a way to use him in the pros. Or we'll mix it up, and we'll do a little of this with him. We'll do a little of that with him. You see, to me, that's a real, real dangerous thing to do. Again, you got to remember, I come from the George Young school, okay? And here's the thing. Here's the thing that George would do with his personnel department. The scouts would write their reports. The cross-checkers cross them off. The GM takes a look at it. The personnel guys take a look at it. And then they would talk to Coach Parcells. And they'd say, Bill, this is what we think about this guy. We're looking at him, like with Carl Banks. We're looking at him in the first round. We love this, and this about him. Take a look at him. Tell us what you think and how you would use him. Well, you know what? Guys who don't give you an appropriate answer, John, guys who don't have conviction about how they're going to use this guy's skill set and they fall into that gray area, those are guys that I don't want to talk to. Because if you can't have conviction and you can't have belief in what you see and know what it is that you're supposed to do with that player's skills, then you know what? You're being a wimp. You're in the gray area, and you don't know what you're doing. And those are the guys who fall into trouble, and make the most mistakes when they draft guys high. And that's why you don't approach things that way. Old school's the best school. Remember that.
Well, I was a big Dante Fowler and Vic Beasley guy, and then they shot up them draft boards on the draft process.
Yes, they did.
Which, as far as Ray Gregory or Dupree, I wasn't a fan of the film I watched, but what I was getting at was, let me ask you one quick question. Did Stagg run a 3-4 when he was at New Orleans, or was that a 4-3 base?
When Spags was in New Orleans, he ran a 4-3. And then Rob Ryan came in and went to the 3-4.
And changed it. Yeah. Okay, because, well, John, you know I've been screaming for this multiple Auburn front defense here, and I was hoping, like you said, we run a 4-3, but until we see what Spags is going to do, I got a feeling that, for one, we're not going to get a tweener because I got a feeling that Stagg and the front office have seen all they want to see at the Monterey Moore with his fingers in the dirt. And I think I'm hoping that Spagnuolo, from his days out there with Jim Harbaugh at Baltimore, brings over some of that 3-4 looks, even if it's just a stand-up rusher there. And we kind of use the Monterey Moore, there's that tweener word again, in that same mold. What did you guys think about that?
Thanks for the call, Rock. Appreciate it. And look, I think Spagnuolo, even when he was here the first time before he went to Baltimore, had Justin Tuck stand up as a rusher sometimes. He did some of that stuff when he was here. It wasn't straight 3-4, but he did use some multiple front stuff. He moved guy around, and I wouldn't be surprised if you saw some more of that this year.
I don't remember much of that, to be honest, but here's what I would say.
Don't you remember he had Tuck wander behind the defensive line a little bit sometimes?
He would have him rover.
Yeah.
Well, the Giants did that with Jack Gregory back in the 70s and then with Casey Merrill a little bit in the 80s with the rover look. But that's not the same as the stand-up 3-4.
No. It's different.
It's different.
Yeah, yeah.
But here's what I would say. Demontre Moore, as you very well put it last week, John, they're trying to get him to put 15 pounds on and keep it on. They want him to be down in the dirt.
But as he stands now, Demontre Moore, to me, would do exactly what some of these converted 3-4 college pass rushers would do. He's the body type. It's the same guy. I mean, Shane Ray is Demontre Moore.
Well, yeah, but
in terms of body type and skills coming out of college.
Here's what I think you'd want. And again, if you look at what the Giants have accumulated, they've accumulated a bunch of 270-pound defensive ends, which tells you they really do want to go standard 4-3. Because guys like Ayers, guys like Selvey, JPP, you know, these guys are big, to Kerry Wynn, These guys are of the 6'3", 6'4", 270-pound type. So that tells you that they really do want to go primarily 4-3 with your standard traditional defensive ends. But now remember, OC played at about 260,
yep.
265. Michael wound up playing down to 255 in his last couple of years, but they weren't stand-up guys. In fact, any time you ever saw OC or Michael Strahan stand up or drop back into a zone blitz, people cringe because that was not the right way to use
them.
Yeah,
but Strahan
was
so
bad idea.
Strong, though.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing.
He's so strong.
What the Giants would like to see is for DeMontre Moore, if he could play at 265. I think they'd love him at 265.
They would sign up for that in a second.
In a second.
DeMontre Moore also, well, he was
with
a good
power.
2-3 inches taller than OC, too, right?
Yeah. He's probably about, I'd say 2 maybe. Maybe. But here's the problem, John. He, to this point in his career, remember he came out early, too. He hasn't fully matured in a lot of ways.
Yep.
And including physically. Now, if he can apply himself physically and mentally into becoming more of a power guy, you can still do it with his frame and his size. You can be a defensive end and still be a potent pass rusher. I've been saying since they drafted him, his skill set's off the charts. He's a double-digit sack guy. But they haven't been able to get it out of him yet. No, I'm against Rocky. I don't want to see DeMontre Moore playing hybrid. Bad idea. Get him stronger. Get him in the dirt.
So our man Philip J. Walsh wants to know why you think you've discovered Brandon Scherff all of a sudden. He's just giving you a hard time.
All of a sudden. Yeah, exactly. All of a sudden. It's okay.
I explained, though. You're not taking credit for discovering him. You're just his biggest supporter.
I mean, conviction. It was part of what George Young preached. See what you see. Believe what you see. The tape doesn't lie. Have conviction.
By the way, do you think you guys can help me get the Tino off his soapbox after the last 5 minutes? I feel like he's been standing on the soapbox. You guys can help me take him down a little bit?
It just look, John, it's the problem that I have with a lot of folks who get into this is that you gotta have beliefs. The worst thing you want to do is go into that draft room. If you're Jerry Reese or you're Mark Ross, the worst, in fact, anybody, any GM, any pro personnel director, any college personnel director, the worst thing that could happen is he goes into the draft room, or for that matter, previewing the draft, talks to a scout and says, "What do you think about this guy?" And the guy goes, "Well, I'm not sure. I think he could do this, but maybe he could do this. Maybe you want to do this with him." No. Don't be wishy-washy. Believe what you see and have conviction.
Well, but sometimes you're not sure what you see. And again, if you're not sure about the player, you probably shouldn't take him.
If you don't,
and
right.
That's fine.
If you don't know, say you don't know. But have enough belief to come up with conviction.
Alan in Miami's up next at 201-939-4513. Alan, thanks for holding, pal. What's up?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Hey, I wanted to say something else, but then you guys just brought this up.
Alan, talk about whatever you want to talk about, bud. It's up to you.
It's okay, go.
We always seem to, you know, and obviously we hear CNN, NFL Network, you guys, everything. We're all so scooped up about the first round. And I think we spend so much time worrying about who we're going to take first. You know, Jerry Reese has had some questionable drafts, but with the exception of David Wilson getting hurt, that's a freak accident. He's been pretty solid on that first pick. Justin Chu, JPP, Prince Amukamara, obviously Odell Beckham Jr. And I think what happens is they're in a good spot at 9. I like that because a lot of guys that they may like or don't like, they might not be there when they pick. They're not going to be forced with that tough decision like having the 1 or 2 pick. Do we pick this guy? Do we trade out? At 9, some of the guys that you were kind of maybe questioning, maybe they're off the board already. So 2 or 3 guys that you really like, now it's a fantasy. You know, if I see a couple of guys available at the 3 spot, you know, I'm like, I don't know if I should take them this early. I don't know what I should do. But if I'm picking on the back-to-back or late in the round, you know, I'm kind of happy with that pick. Does that make sense?
I understand it, John. The best thing that he just said is that there is much too much attention paid to the first round.
Well, but here's why, though.
And I got one more point.
Alan, no problem. Hang out. We will let you finish. The reason you have to talk about the first round is because you have a hard enough time predicting who's going to be on the board at 9.
Oh, sure.
How the hell can you discuss who the Giants are picking in the second round? You have no idea who's going to be there. 39 players are off the board by then. It's just, it's impossible to figure out who's going to be there. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard to have fun predicting who the team's going to pick.
Oh, I get that part of
right.
it. In terms of the prediction process, that's all you can really do with any sense of
it's hard.
Hope. But in terms of the importance of the draft.
Oh, absolutely.
Those other picks,
sure.
It's so often that people ignore them or don't think about them. But, hey, going into this draft, the Giants know they need to hit, not just in day one, but they need to hit in day two, and they need a couple of hits in day three, too. They know that.
And to make one point, everybody says they're dying. I went to 12 games last year. I was in Philly on that massacre. I was in Seattle. And the one thing I saw,
God
bless
you,
physicality up front to stop the run. And I think this is a division that has the potential. DeMarco Murray, Ryan Matthews, Darren Sproles, if he's healthy, Darren McFadden, Alfred Morris, and potentially Adrian Peterson could land up in Dallas. We need somebody that can stop the run. Either that's going to be a great linebacker, whether it's Ray or Beasley, if they find a way to fall there. But we need to focus on stopping the run because, yeah, it's nice to have a flash guy, a skill guy, but at the end of the day, we got 6 games against these guys, against the Murrays of the world, against Alfred Morris and those guys. I think we need to go back to get somebody really physical that's going to help us stop the run this year.
All right, Alan, thanks for the call, bud.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. I don't think anybody would argue with that. Hey, look.
No.
We talked about the focus this offseason was winning the battle line of scrimmage on both sides.
Trenches.
Work inside out.
That's it.
So if you want to pick a guy that's going to help you run the ball a lot better, cool. I'm down with that. You want to pick a guy that's going to help you stop the run a lot better? Cool. I'm down with that.
O-line and defensive front seven, certainly concentrated areas. No doubt.
Though, you know what? Middle rounds, even day two, I would have no problem taking a corner.
Oh, not at all. Not at all.
No issue.
You know, we talked about this on yesterday's program, John Walter. Thurman's in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And McBride, who right now is the third corner, is coming off an injury.
And he's been hurt 2 straight years now.
So I've got no problem with the corner either. It goes back to that foundation. Remember, you got to have four spots. Quarterback, left tackle, corner,
defensive end or receiver?
Pass rusher.
Right.
Pass rusher.
And you can argue in today's NFL now, receiver's the fifth one.
I go old school.
All right, well, I think I just segue myself. I have two people tweeting about how the Giants should trade up to 3 to draft Amari Cooper. Your thoughts?
Look.
I just want to see
him. Is there going to be anybody? Honestly, you know what? Let's just get this right out there, John. Everybody knows that Cooper and White are top 10 values on anybody's board.
Yeah, but you know what? And here's my thing, and I replied to the tweet already. Don't trade up at 9. At 9, you're going to get a really good player. How did the Bills feel about trading up for Sammy Watkins last year when they could have stayed put and got Odell Beckham Jr.? Probably not feeling too great about it, to be quite honest with you. They don't have their first-round pick this year. It's in Cleveland because they traded up to get Watkins when they could have just taken Odell Beckham Jr. where they were.
Yeah. I would think it's extremely unlikely they move. Now, I think one of the things I said yesterday was that if you had to move up one spot from 9 to 8 – and the price wasn't prohibitive because you really thought that you wanted Scherf.
Yeah,
if you really wanted him, I'm just using Scherf. But if there was somebody there, player X, and you really, really have to have him, and you're at 8 now, and you're sitting at 9, if you wanted to go one spot, maybe I could see it. Otherwise, I'm with you, John, because there are clearly some real premier players in the top 10.
Yeah, that drop. You know, sometimes the drop off in these drafts happen at pick 6 or 7. Or after pick 6 or 7, all the blue chippers are gone. But you know what? This is not one of those drafts, in my opinion.
Yeah, thank goodness for the Giants that it's not the Cedric Jones draft where they were one spot out of a handful of premier players that were on the board, and they pushed their need above value and drafted Cedric Jones and got burned.
I brought that up actually last week on one of the shows. I had a long conversation about that. Dre in Atlanta, you're up next, Dre.
Hey, what's going on, Peter? Hey, John, how you doing?
What's up, Dre?
Hi.
Just going to keep it real simple today. I'm going to touch on P-Dot's draft aficionado. Now, you always talked about the golden egg is usually in the third and fourth round. I was looking at safety, looking at Byron Jones. You know, I didn't get his pro day 40 numbers.
Let's see if we can find his numbers right now for you.
Right, because he didn't run the 40. I don't believe he ran the 40 in the combine. But he did do a 12.
Who's he asking
about?
He
did jump a 12 in the broad jump.
Byron Jones.
He has a hellacious vertical leap.
What they gave him, let's see, they got a vertical at 44.5.
Yeah, he actually had a monster combine running a lot of those drills. He really did.
And they gave him, they listed him at 6'5" and 199.
Oh, here we go.
Vertical was 44.5.
Byron Jones ran an unofficial 4.36 at his pro day, 40-yard dash. That's a great number for a safety. And again, he's a corner in college, but a lot of people think he will project to safety in the NFL. But at 4.36, he could probably stay at corner.
Right. But since we're looking for an athletic free safety that pretty much can run sideline to sideline with cornerback skills, that looks like somebody we might want to look into in bringing him on board.
I think if you want to take a look at him in rounds 2 or 3, I think that's certainly a consideration based on what he's done.
Now,
Giants fans that said we're lacking.
Well, the thing is, though, and I'm just going by this one scouting report, because I do have other stuff written about him at home, but I'd have to look it up. I will tell you, the one scouting report I have says he's a mid-second-round guy, so he might be a little bit of a reach at 40, and there's no way he's going to get to the Giants in the third round. So that's part of the issue there.
Mid-second-round is around 40. I mean, that's mid.
No, to me, that's early, because I like to divide them up into thirds. Early is the top 10 or so, then you get the mid-10 or so, and then you get the bottom 10
They're
or so.
They're only a few picks away from mid-second round.
In any event. I mean, that's certainly someone I'd look at. Let's put it that way. That's it?
All right, thanks, Dre.
That's it. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Appreciate it, man. You know what, though? And that was a name that came up a lot at the draft because of his, doing well in the drills that measure explosiveness, like the broad jump, like the high jump, things like that.
Look at his 20-yard shuttle, 3.94, broad jump 12. I mean, numbers are fine. There's no issue there. That's for sure.
No, absolutely not.
Interesting, John, and we talk about the tweeners all the time with the linebackers and the defensive ends, but what you have a lot of times, too, are these corners / safeties. And that's a little bit of a different story, though, because in some instances, when you have that corner who's a little bit bigger, as long as he's a good hitter and a good tackler.
He's only 199 pounds, Jones, though. That's the worry.
Well, again, you'd like to believe he'll put on a little bit more as he matures. But it's a lot easier for me to accept a corner converting to safety than it is for a pass-rushing tweener at defensive end to convert to linebacker because you're asking him to do so many different things backpedaling.
And the worry here is his ability to hit and tackle at safety. They say he's not – the scouting report that I'm looking at, not great man-to-man, but really good ball skills, can play zone well, which is why you think he might be able to transfer those skills to free safety a little bit. But at 4.35 or 4.36, whatever his unofficial time was, that's dynamite. That happened today, I think, by the way.
Now, remember this. Not all safeties are terrific hitters.
I know, but 200 pounds.
You'd like to see a little bit more strength on him, for sure.
201-939-4513. Back to the phones. Jeff in Rhode Island's next. Jeff, what's up?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
What's up, bud?
Well, it was nice to hear you mention number 81 of the football Giants from Delta State. Jack Gregory was a damn good player for the Giants back
Outstanding
in those days.
Outstanding player. Outstanding player.
Okay. Reason I'm calling today, I just want to ask Johnny if he had any thought of doing an interview with Coach Spags sometime before the draft comes up. I don't know if the Giants would allow that to happen.
Yeah, I don't know when it's going to happen, Jeff, but I believe they're trying to work out Bobby Papa doing something with him at some point in the coming week. So that should happen sometime soon. I'm not sure when, but the plan is for that to happen sometime, I think, either this month or next month.
Do we not have a media assistant coaches day coming up too?
Oh, is that true?
I think we do.
Usually that happens during OTAs. I'm not sure if that's happened before the draft.
Let me see. When is that? Oh, I don't have it. I don't have it here in my calendar.
I think the assistant coaches come in May during OTAs.
I can't remember.
I could be wrong, though. I'm not sure. But, yeah, again, we should have, Jeff, we should have Papa with Spags sometime in the next month or so.
Yeah.
All right. Just one other thing for Paula. There was another player that the Giants reached for. I can't recall his name. He was a defensive tackle from Miami, and here, of course, he had
William Joseph.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, here's the thing about William Joseph. He was late first round, and the thing about him was he had all the measurables. And I remember Michael Strahan telling me, Stray used to say all the time, you know, Willie Joe, he's got it all. Michaels loved his skill set, and he had a terrific skill set. He should have been a really good defensive tackle. The problem was the intangibles. William Joseph didn't necessarily have the intestinal fortitude, if I can be rather diplomatic about it, to bring out the best in himself and the work ethic that he needed to bring out the best in himself. But he had the skill set. And for that reason, the Giants wound up biting the bullet and making the pick. But you are right.
Yeah.
He was a DT. There was definitely need there. But I will tell you, at that time going in, the value did appear to meet the need, but the intangibles weren't there.
Okay, guys, you have a good day. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it. Sam in Washington, D.C. is up next. Sam, what's up?
Hey, John. Hey, Paul. How you guys doing?
Doing well, Sam.
Hey, just speaking of which, regarding wishy-washy players, I know one thing for sure, at least from the time that Jerry Reese has been on the helm, we haven't been wishy-washy with selecting players. I mean, we're pretty much going to every draft knowing what we want to do, what kind of scheme we want. To play for the season from a 4-3 bottom line.
Right. And by the way, to be fair, William Joseph eventually did wind up with a bad back injury, but before that he was kind of wishy-washy anyway. Go ahead.
but speaking of which, that's why I'm really convinced that if there's somebody up there that somebody's willing to trade for, i.e. a quarterback and a team needs a quarterback, I would trade it the 9 pick and probably get more draft picks in return, because I think, especially when you see that we have a needed safety, well, there's a lot of decent safeties, or kind of you said these guys who are cornerback safety kinds, kind of like a role kind of guy who we can pick, but probably aren't at the value where we're going to be picking on those later rounds. So if we've got a couple of draft positions to spare, I think we could probably pick up two or three of these guys, see how they turn out for us in the season. What do you guys think?
Well, John, we talked about this a week or so ago, and I'm curious to how strongly you agree, because I think you were on board with me that if a quarterback falls, if one of those receivers falls, if one of those tweener pass rushers falls, phone's going to be ringing at 9.
Absolutely.
In Jerry Reese's office. You have to listen.
Hey, and look, I have no problem moving down a few slots. I really don't.
Not too far, though.
No.
I go down 3 or 4, but that's about it.
Not too far back now.
That's it. 4. I'll go to 13. That's it. No, that's it. I'm serious. I'm not going past 13. I've studied this. I'm not going past 13.
I think that's fair.
But that's me. That's not Jerry. That's me. You okay with going 13, John? 13?
13, yeah. I don't know if I want to go much further past that, because I think then you're getting close to that drop-off that we talked about, where you're getting away from the blue chippers, and you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, Paul, in particular, if you're highly convinced that that first pick is going to be an offensive lineman, I think you're safe at 13, but I think the last guy that's probably valued at the 10 range that's going to be there at 9 will be probably Shelton, and you're probably going to lose out on him if you do trade up to 13, I believe.
That's a fair
personally.
Point.
Yeah. Oh, see, to me, Scherf is the only offensive lineman that's a 9. So if you have your heart set on the value and the need match, if Scherf is gone at 9, then you're more than likely to, if it were me, to think about dropping a couple spots. But now you have to say to yourself, okay, if we really have Shelton rated, do we want to take him? If we really have maybe Lael Collins rated in the top 15, which I do, I think he's a top 15, now you're on the borderline of risking losing him, okay? If you think maybe you want to take one of these backers, God only knows, but if you want to, you may risk losing them if you move back 4 spots.
Yeah, those are the guys that will likely be gone
right,
at that point.
You would
I mean,
think.
I don't know how highly you like Dupree. He's a guy that you could probably get around 15.
He's going to be real close. He's going to be real close. And I'll tell you something else. John mentioned this before, and I agree with you, John. The Giants do need some more help at corner.
And let me tell you, and I think one player that I would not be shocked if he snuck into the top 10 by
Michigan
draft
State
is Trey Waynes.
Bingo!
To me, He has – I don't know why he's not a top 10 pick, to be honest with you. He's
he could sneak there.
He's been one of the best corners in the Big Ten. He had a great senior year. His times at the Combine were off the charts good. He ran a 4.3-something at the 40 at the Combine. To me, he has everything you want out of a bump-and-run press coverage corner, which is exactly the type of corner that Steve Spagnuolo wants.
Yeah, yeah.
I love Trey Wingo.
And speaking of which, I mean, we used Roll a lot in the slot. So a lot of times you could get value with a guy who's a tweener kind of guy, safety, cornerback kind of guy, like Demarius Randall from Arizona State, who's not necessarily your speedster and could keep up with your fast receivers, but could probably keep up with those slot guys.
The best way I could explain my feelings on this, and John, I'm going to echo your statements about him. I think he's right there on the borderline of being a top 10 guy for me in terms of value, and that's why I would not be shocked if the Giants took him. But the way I say it is here. The Giants took Beckham last year at 12. Clearly, he was outstanding value. Okay, did value meet need there? Not necessarily, but value was just too good to pass up. If they think that this corner is a serious top 10 guy, which, again, I could see, I can't cry if they take him. I can't.
It
may not be the biggest need, but you know what? They could still use one.
Let's go to Shakes in Baltimore, Maryland on line one. Shakes, what's going on, pal?
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
How are you, Shakes?
What's going on? Hey, Pete, I got a question for you.
Oh, boy.
What's up, man?
I know that you
– Hey, oh, by the way, hold on. But before you do this, what's up with some of your constituency? Boy, you know, some of the folks on Twitter who come at me the most with rabid, foaming-at-the-mouth kind of comments are all your people. Seriously. You know that? I don't know what you feed them or what you give them on your program – but these people are, like, off the wall.
Yeah, they dislike some of your opinions, man.
Oh, that's for sure. That's okay. Hey, you know what? Let them spend 33 years covering the NFL. That's okay. Go ahead.
Hey. My question for you is, P-Dot, is I know you like Scherf, right?
Yeah.
And my thing is, I actually have Lyle Collins as my top-rated tackle over Scherf.
I got him as two, but that's close enough.
Okay.
All right, so don't be throwing spears at me now. Don't have your friends throw spears at me because I'm with you on that. He's right up there.
Okay.
He's close. I got him as a top 15.
Huh?
I'm having fun with you, man. That's all right. I got him as a top 15.
No, I just didn't hear you. I'm sorry.
No, I got Collins as a top 15, so I'm with you. I think he's a solid, solid pick. If they go that way, I get it.
Okay. Well, my question for you was, like, since you feel that Scherf is over Collins, just a nudge, I guess that's what you're saying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What's the difference in between Scherf and Collins to you?
Well,
what makes Scherf better?
I think, to me, Collins is going to wind up being a tackle and solely a tackle. I don't think he's going to have the versatility and the level of play that Scherf could have at either one of the spots. You see, Shakes, one of the things I was taught a long time ago is that when you draft an offensive lineman, especially high, what you want to do is to decrease your margin of error. And to do that, what do? You look at a tackle first and say, okay, what style is he? Is he a technician or is he a power guy? If he's a technician like Pete is, he's probably only going to wind up being a finesse left tackle. He's probably not going to be a mauling right tackle, which is why Pete's only a top 20 for me, because he's a finesse technique left tackle. That's where I think he's got to go. I don't think he can play guard. He doesn't have the physical structure to play guard. He's too stand up tall. It's not going to work. And he doesn't have the mauling power to play right tackle. But Scherf, we've seen him in college. He can play left tackle. He's got the mauling boxcar power body to play right tackle as a mauler, as a scrapper, okay? And he's also got the ability, we've seen him in college, also to play guard. So your margin of error on Scherf is much less than it is on Pete.
Do you see Collins as a right tackle or left tackle, though?
I see Collins probably as a right tackle.
Okay.
He's got power to do it. However, I think he's a tackle. I don't see him being a guard. I think he's got a little less versatility than Scherf does. And that's one of the reasons why I got
I'm
your
sorry,
phone.
I'm sorry, P-Dot.
That's right. Go.
P-Dot, to cut you off. But I kind of disagree with you. I think that you can kick Collins at guard. I think that Scherff is maybe more sure at guard. If you kick him at guard, you may be more sure.
Collins is a power guy, which gives him a chance. I'm just less inclined to think so. But that I think he's got a chance. He's got a much better chance than Pete does. I think you agree with that, right?
Oh, listen, and I may get some flack from a lot of people on this, but I do not like Pete. To me, I gave Pete a second-round value.
Ooh, that's kind of low.
I don't like his stiffness in his hips. I really don't.
I'm not a huge fan, but, again, I still got him top 20. But big drop-off for me. You see, the drop-off from Scherff to Collins, to me, is kind of like that. The drop off to Pete goes woo.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
I
wouldn't say second round though.
My last question, and I'm gonna get off. And I'm sorry to take up a lot of time.
That's all good, Chase.
My last question for y'all is: if we do trade down, and you say you're not really trying to go past 13, and that's fine. So you get an extra third round pick, right? I think that would be good. And if that's the case, do y'all still see that running back is out the question? Because with extra picks, I mean, I think you can do something like that now.
I would still say running back is out of the question for the first round. Chase, I have a question for you real quick before you go. At 9. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Okay, at 9, here's my question for you. If I'm taking Cooper off the board, I don't want to make this easy on you. You have Kevin White sitting there.
He never does.
You got Scherff sitting there. You got Shelton sitting there. Who's your pick at 9?
Kevin White.
All right. If White's gone, do you go Shelton or Scherff? Or do you go Collins?
I'm going Shelton.
All right. So there you go. I was just curious where you stood a month before the draft, and I wonder if that's going to change in the next few weeks. I'll be curious to see. Thanks, Shakes.
It might change. But thank you for taking my call, y'all.
Shakes, good talking to you, man.
See now, so Shakes isn't coming after you on Twitter. It's his boys that are coming after
right,
you.
Right. No, Shakes and I, even though sometimes we don't see things exactly the
same.
Disagree,
but you have fun
we
with
have
each
fun.
Other. Oh,
we
absolutely.
Have fun. We're good. And I think for the most part, we do agree on a lot of things. You know, I don't think he was a Marcus Kuhn fan. You know?
No, he is not. He is not that.
That is true. And we like Marcus for a lot of reasons, but, you know, it is time for him to really step up his production for sure.
Who was the linebacker? I can't remember for the life of me that he was so excited about last year that they brought in
Curry.
March. Oh, yeah, Aaron Curry. That's right.
Yeah,
that one didn't work out so well, did it, Shakes? And he knows that.
It's okay.
Shakes, we love you. You're the best.
It's okay.
And the shakedown. I think
he's
doing well.
His constituency, boy,
they're fiery.
Oh, man.
Well, and you know what? They're passionate and they're smart. They're good Giant fans. You can disagree with them.
They get after it.
But
I'll tell you
they're
that.
Smart.
And, I'll tell you that.
And they know their stuff. Frank in Tampa, you're going to wrap us up today, bud. How are you, Frank? Don't bring us down too much to close out the show, buddy.
I almost utilized a false name today because I'm about to speak Giant sacrilege.
Oh, so boy, here we go.
You may have to muffle Mr. Dottino and tie him to a chair for a minute, but here's my thoughts. If the Giants don't believe Nassib is the quarterback of the future and they don't believe that they're one player away, excuse me, then I believe that if Mariota is there at 9, the Giants have to take him, and I'll explain why. The reasons being that Eli's going to want a fortune next year if they want to keep him. If they don't keep him and Nassib isn't the quarterback of the future, they're in the wilderness for 10 years. They have, if they do take him and they don't believe they're one player away, so they go ahead and take him, he sits for a year. If, Lord willing, Eli lights it up, we go to the Super Bowl, you have great trade bait for next year to maybe get your number one pick back. If Eli doesn't do well, you have your quarterback potentially for the next 10 years if they have a number one grade on him. I don't know how you can pass him up if he's there. The worst thing you can do as an organization is have an aging quarterback that's going to go somewhere between 6 and 10 and 10 and 6 for the next 4 years, and then you have nobody there. Now you've put yourself in a 10-year wilderness. I think this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, possibly. I love Eli. No one loves him more. But, you know, just like with Phil, teams have to make decisions at the end of the players' careers, and I don't know how you could possibly let him go.
Well, Frank, I hear what you're saying. I think there are two things that you're overrating here a little bit. Number one, mm-hmm. you say it's a 10-year wilderness. Why is mm-hmm. it? I mean, I don't think you know that for sure. They went from Kerry Collins to Eli Manning in the span of a year. So I don't think you're necessarily looking at a 10-year wilderness.
Well, if you get three or four from Eli, and then you have nobody sitting there, you're looking at a potentially 6 to 8, 10-year wilderness.
No, I don't know, but for example, let's say – I want to give a theoretical situation here, Frank. Let's say okay. Eli is 39 years old. He's finishing his career with the Giants. He has a terrible year because he gets hurt, and the team goes 3-13, 4-12, 5-11. And you're picking second or third in the draft. Who says you can't get your quarterback that year, and then all of a sudden you get your next quarterback the year afterwards?
I hate to agree
right,
with you, John,
but you're
right.
You're left hoping that you end up with a three-win year so that you can get your quarterback of the future. That's what you're trying to avoid.
Let me say, first of all, you're making a lot of assumptions in your scenario.
Yeah, a lot of assumptions.
But let me go back to John's point for just a second. So even if it doesn't go that badly and they're not a three-win team, why can't they get a stopgap like they did with Kurt Warner, who was the quarterback between Kerry Collins and Eli Manning, and he went 5-4, and they probably would have been a wild card team.
We're trying to win Super Bowls, not have stopgaps.
No,
that's our goal.
But
you
can't do it every year, Frank. You can't do it every year. There's a way to build the franchise up.
Exactly.
And it's okay to have a couple years where you're building. Look, 2004 and 2005 might not have been great record-wise, but they were necessary years to get Eli Manning to where he had to be a Super Bowl caliber quarterback, and those are natural years of progression for NFL franchises. I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with those types of
years. Well, let me ask you guys both this. Do you think that the Giants are one player away from a Super Bowl?
No, of course not.
Okay, then why not get your quarterback of the future if they believe that he's got a number one grade?
Well, first of all, you don't know what the grade is. I don't know what the grade is. I don't know what the grade is on
Mario. I said if they have that high of a grade on them,
you're making assumptions here.
If you're not going to win a Super Bowl, which is the goal.
No, but Frank, hold on a second. But what if you're two players away? What if the player you draft next year, combined with either somebody you get in free agency or someone that develops from within or someone you pick in the first round next year, makes your team good enough to win in 2016? And then all of a sudden,
Eli's done, and now you have nothing.
Eli's done in 2016?
Oh, man.
Yeah, he's really close.
Frank, you're making a lot of way out of this world assumptions.
You guys would pass on him?
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. I'm not sold on Mariota, Frank. I'm not.
Look, Derek.
Oh, no, I'm saying if you're the Giants and they have a number one grade on him as a 10-year franchise.
Okay, wait, hold on. Okay, Frank, if you're telling me.
You would tell the Giants to pass?
No, Frank, if you're telling me when the Giants get to 9 and Mariota is the top player on their board and they think he's a franchise quarterback of the same caliber of Eli Manning and I'm Jerry Reese and that's my expert opinion on Mariota, I take him. But I take him.
He better be that much better than the rest of the cluster.
But
he better be.
I think you're framing a situation here that is unrealistic.
Totally. Totally unrealistic.
Because I don't think, in my opinion, and based on a lot of other people that Paul's talked to, that I've talked to, I don't think many people in this league, if any people in this league, have Mariota ranked at a level 3 or 4 tiers, number one overall, that much better than everybody else.
You remember something. Remember something. The big question on him, and everybody's talking about how he's be a great fit for Chip Kelly in Philly because of the system. Well, he's going to have to adapt to a whole new system when he comes to the NFL.
Even if he
goes, likelihood.
Even if he's with Chip Kelly, by the way, he doesn't
have to
run his college system.
Right. And here's the thing. Okay. Remember the big question everybody talks about when I hear Mariota. Okay. Besides a couple of the little physical things, is the fact that he's never run a huddle offense.
Yeah.
And that when he gets up to the line of scrimmage and those complex NFL defenses are staring him in the face, what's he going to do?
You don't know.
Yeah, exactly,
he's also never been under center.
That's why I'm saying you could have him sit for a year while
friend,
you see what Eli's got
you,
left.
You are making
And again,
so
these are assumptions based upon if the Giants believe, and that's my whole point, Giants believe that he can do those things and do them at a high level,
problem.
And he's a 10-year franchise quarterback,
your foundation assumption is ridiculous to start with. And oh, by the way, Frank, to be perfectly honest with you.
What part's ridiculous?
To say that you're suggesting that the Giants believe that Mariota is a top-notch franchise quarterback that much ahead of everybody
else. Well, we're living in a hypothetical. But would you do it?
You can't even say if you're being unrealistic. That's it. We're done with him.
Thank you, Frank. Well, Frank, I appreciate the call, and I think the other thing that I'll disagree, you think Eli's done in 2016. He's 35 years old.
That's crazy.
35-year-old quarterbacks and win Super Bowls in this league.
38, 39 could still be very good.
Look what Tom Brady did last year.
Bingo.
How old is Tom Brady?
But I'm going to even if I wanted to play along with you, and I don't because I think your assumptions are way out of whack, if I wanted to play along with you, I'm going to tell John, and I've said this before, I think you've heard me say it, I know Anita heard me say it yesterday when we talked about the quarterbacks, Derek Carr is the most talented of any quarterback that came out in the 2014 or 2015 drafts. Derek Carr is the highest quarterback on my board for those two drafts. I think Derek Carr is really good. I think he can be a franchise guy. Unfortunately, he's stuck with a team that's got a lot of stuff around him. But Carr is a guy to get excited about. Not Mariota, not Winston.
By the way, here's a great quote before we say goodbye real quick. And I got linked to me by one of our good Twitter followers, NFL Gents, from Peter King, Ed Valentine, and Big Blue on SB Nation. Big Blue View had this posted. And this is the quote from Peter King from one of his stories, I guess. You want to pick in the top nine. Here's what a few football people at the league meetings are thinking about the breakdown of this draft. 9 prime picks, then 8 or 10 really good prospects, then maybe 30 or so of the same player. The top 9 quarterbacks, Winston and Mariota, Leonard Williams, White and Cooper, Fowler, Beasley, Scherf, and Waynes. After that, the beauty starts to be in the eye of the beholder. I had one GM tell me the 17th pick on a board might be the 53rd pick on another team's board, and that could be a team we really respect.
And that's a lot of stuff that echoes what John and I have been talking about and our philosophies about this. And quite honestly, that's one of the few times I've heard someone come right out and say that the Michigan State corner,
I agree.
And I'm thrilled to hear that because – I think
I like Waynes too.
I do.
And it's funny, Paul and I didn't talk about that before
we
the
did
show
not.
Either. So that was literally in agreement as we went on here. And that's interesting that they have Waynes ahead of Shane Ray.
Yeah.
Waynes ahead of Randy Gregory and in front of Shelton, which I thought was all interesting.
I'm on board with him being value right there at around the 10 spot. So it's not a shocker if they take him. You can't be critical.
I had another really good tweet here I wanted to get to, but I think we got to go. Let me see if I can bring it up really, really quick.
Go ahead, and then we'll get out of here.
Where is he? This guy at SNF Mikey had a really good tweet, and I got to try to find it here.
You want
really
me to find
fast.
Him? SNF?
If Amari Cooper was on the board last year, where would he rank with last year's wide receiver crop? I said he'd be right next to Sammy Watkins. That was my answer. I think Watkins and Cooper would be 1 and 1A. Well, Cooper might even be number one, to be honest with you.
Let's put it this way. We knew there were 3 premier receivers coming out last year. Watkins, Evans, and Beckham were
the
third.
And I think most people probably had Watkins and Evans ahead of Beckham.
Yes. I think Beckham was the third. And whether or not you had Watkins or Evans 1 or 2,
right.
Whatever.
I think Cooper would be right with those first 2 guys.
I think Cooper would have been, let's just make it a four-way penthouse.
Okay.
Because it would have been all 4 of those guys and mix them up wherever you want. Right. It would have been a 4-way penthouse instead of only a 3-way.
All right. Good job, Paulie Dotz.
Good one.
Hold it down the next couple of days for me. I'm going back to visit my wife's family out there in Iowa. I will scout Brandon Scherf for Paul while I'm out there. I will try to hunt him down for him.
I expect video. I expect video. Get that camera phone out. I expect video.
Well, how about this? What's his hometown in Iowa? I'll go there. I'll check
it out. You know what? We will find that out. I don't know what it is.
Look, I'm not done with your homework yet.
I know whatever it was, he was eating corn-fed cattle. Guaranteed.
I'm sure he was. Paul, appreciate the time.
You got it, John.
All right, we'll see you tomorrow at Giants.com. Tino takes you the rest of the week. Have a good one, everybody.